Appreciate Paul and Rich inviting me to make this presentation. And Paul said I was going to give a higher level talk. I'm not sure how much higher level, maybe superficial, but kind of give an overview of nitrogen fixation and response of nitrogen fixation to nitrogen fertilizer. I'd also like to recognize USB and the Arkansas Soybean Promotion Board. A lot of the work that I'll be presenting from my own lab has been funded by them. We're very appreciative of their support. To begin with, I'd like to start off with a quote that John Streeter had from Fred and Grawl, I believe it was, in 1916 in a review that he wrote. And the quote goes like this: "It's been known for a long time that the presence of certain salts in the soil has a tendency to retard the normal development of root nodules. This is especially true of the soluble salts of nitrogen, such as nitrates." So that's the starting point for where we're going to be today, and I'll come back to this review later on at the end of the presentation. What I'd like to do is begin with is just review the importance of nitrogen and nitrogen fixation to soybean production. Then we'll look at the response of nitrogen fixation to inorganic nitrogen, and we'll touch a little bit on the yields of nitrogen fertilizer. I'm sure that some of our other presenters will go into this area in much greater detail. So we can start out with thinking about how much nitrogen soybean needs or typically acquires during the season by just assuming if we have 38% protein and we look at the amount of nitrogen that's removed in the grain versus the grain yield. So with 38% protein, if we hit this magic number of a yield of 6,719, 100 bushels per acre, which everybody seems to be obsessed about, we remove in the grain about 408 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. We can also assume that if we have a harvest index of 0.45 and that the stover is about 1% nitrogen, we're adding roughly another 120 or so kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So we can sum those and look at the total amount of nitrogen and 100 bushel per acre yield as being somewhere around 558 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and the above ground soybean mass. And so we're not including anything that's in the roots at this point, but that gives you an idea of the amount of nitrogen that's required to have these kind of yields. And of course, as we increase yields above that 100 bushel per acre mark, we're increasing that proportionately. So this is one of the reasons that nitrogen is so very, very important for soybean production. Another reason that you can think about too is when you have this 6-ton or more yield, you're producing a tremendous amount of crop mass. Somewhere in the for a 100 bushel per acre yield, you're producing roughly around 6 tons per hectare and just total biomass. So tremendous amount of biomass that's there, and photosynthesis requires large amounts of nitrogen. So when we look at this, this is a review that Sinclair and Horrier published in 1989. It's looking at the response of carbon exchange rate, leaf photosynthesis versus leaf nitrogen on a specific leaf nitrogen basis. So that's grams of nitrogen per meter squared of leaf area for three crops, for maize, rice, and soybean. And you can see the response here of soybean is it requires more nitrogen per unit of photosynthesis than does rice or maize. So large amounts of nitrogen are required for photosynthesis, and we can express this also on a more crop basis by looking at radiation use efficiency. And Sinclair and Horrier plotted here radiation use efficiency in grams per megajoule of intercepted radiation versus carbon exchange rate. And again, we see that as carbon exchange rate increases, we reach some sort of plateau out here at radiation use efficiency somewhere a little above 1.2 grams per megajoule. And I'll be coming back to this later in the talk, because in some of our very high yield research where we've applied large amounts of nitrogen, we've seen radiation use efficiency values approaching 2. One of the questions that we had when we were beginning research in my lab was how much nitrogen can nitrogen fixation provide in soils that are inherently low in organic matter and low in mineral nitrogen. And this was really important because for a lot of the research has been done using acetylene reduction as a measure of nitrogen fixation. They've been conducted in soils that have been high in organic matter and have large amounts of mineral nitrogen present, and or they've been conducted in a controlled environment. So we wanted to look in the field environments, how much nitrogen under optimum growing conditions could you expect to get from nitrogen fixation? These are some of the results that we've got. We're looking at nitrogen fixation rate here on the y-axis versus days after emergence. We're beginning at 55 days after emergence. This would represent the beginning of seed fill. And we've got three different maturity group isolines here, maturity groups 4, 5, and 6, and then a high-yielding breeding line that's a maturity group 5. So we also looked at a non-nod during this same growth period, and we have essentially a flat line here throughout reproductive development at less than 2 grams of nitrogen per meter squared. So all the nitrogen accumulation we're assuming on this line was obtained from nitrogen fixation. The important parts that you'll notice here is all of these genotypes essentially had the same slope. That slope was 0.4 grams of nitrogen per meter squared. And not shown here is that nitrogen fixation continued almost until the end of the seed fill period, until we reached R7. So this was a well-maintained crop, other than it had no mineral nitrogen available, very low organic matter. Seed fill nitrogen fixation continued until the end of the seed fill period. And we're able to get yields from this somewhere between 4.5 and 5 tons per hectare. So still relatively high yields under well-managed conditions, approaching 5 tons per hectare. So we're looking also in this same experiment at the seed nitrogen accumulation rate. So we've got seed nitrogen seed nitrogen amount in grams of nitrogen per meter squared during the reproductive period for these same genotypes. The genotypes all had the same slope. The genotypes all had the same slope, but we'll see that the intercepts were different, and that was just because they had different maturities. But the important part to look at right here is this slope is 0.59. So the nitrogen accumulation rate in the seed was considerably greater than the nitrogen fixation rate. So where did this nitrogen come from? We're looking at the leaves. We see that we have a negative slope here of negative 0.17. So that nitrogen is being, at least a portion of that nitrogen is being removed from the leaves and is accumulating in the seeds. Same story with the stems here, looking at a nitrogen withdrawal from the stems of 0.14 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per day. So just reviewing this first section of the talk, large amounts of nitrogen are required for seed production and for photosynthesis. Nitrogen fixation is capable of providing all of the nitrogen required for yield somewhere between 4.5 and 5 tons when the crop is well managed, and especially managed with regards to soil moisture availability. Seed nitrogen accumulation rates are considerably greater than the rates of nitrogen fixation, and nitrogen fixation continues till near the end of seed fill when the crop has plenty of available soil moisture and is well managed. I want to look now at the response of nitrogen fixation to inorganic nitrogen, and we'll start back going back to Streeter's review from 1988. This is looking at, on the y-axis here, the response relative to plants receiving no nitrate. Figure out my little pointer here. Versus nitrate concentration. So he's got three different curves here. That curve A represents nodule weight per plant. And to look at this, I want you to look at the bump at low nitrogen concentrations, where we actually have an increase in nodule weight per plant when the nitrate concentration is less than about 2 millimolar. And that's what we often see in field environments. When you have a small amount of nitrogen available, the crop grows much quicker, the plant establishes itself better, you have a more robust plant, and you may actually get an increase in nitrogen fixation because of this. Curve B there represents nodule-specific activity. This is typically measured with acetylene reduction activity. You can think about how much nitrogen fixation is occurring per gram of nodule weight. And so you start seeing decreases in the specific activity, somewhere around 4 millimolar point. Curve C represents nodule number per plant. And so actually you can have relatively large numbers of nodules on a plant, up to really no effect until around 6 millimolar. But the nodule weight per plant will have decreased and the nodule specific activity will have decreased. So you have perhaps many small nodules that are not very active under those conditions. So just because you have a large number of nodules on the plant doesn't mean that that plant's fixing very much nitrogen. So we can look at the inhibitory effects. This kind of summarizes that figure. We have a decrease in root hair infection with inorganic nitrogen in the soil. This is the first step in the nodulation process. Decrease in nodule development. The nodules really don't grow off very well. They don't get large. A decrease in nitrogenase activity. Those nodules that are present aren't very active. And then if we maintain a high concentration of nitrate around those nodules, the bacteroids actually disintegrate, they die, and the nodule dies. Not all sources of nitrate, not all sources of inorganic nitrogen have the same effect on nitrogen fixation. Nitrate has a much greater effect than does ammonium or urea. And this is some work from Harper and Nichols in 1978. This is kind of a confusing graph, but we have acetylene reduction activity on the left vertical scale, nodule mass on the right vertical scale, and tongue state level on the x-axis. Don't worry about tongue state level right now. I'll come back to it. I want to focus on tongue state level of zero. Okay, so these are plants that have been exposed to either 6 millimolar nitrate or 6 millimolar urea. The two points down here at the bottom are plants that have been exposed to 6 millimolar nitrate. You can see very low nodule activity, very little nodule mass. Compare that to 6 millimolar urea, relatively high nodule mass, relatively high nitrogenase activity. So urea has less of an effect than does nitrate. The tongue state inhibits nitrate reductase. And so what we look at is when we increase the tongue state level, we see that there is an increase in nodule mass per plant, and there's an increase in nitrogenase activity for those plants that have been exposed to nitrate. So the idea is that it's some metabolite downstream from nitrate that's actually causing much of this inhibition. Urea and ammonium, however, aren't usually found in the soil. They're very transient. And so even if you put urea fertilizer out, it's not going to last very long. Once it's going to go to ammonium very quickly, and that's going to be nitrified unless you're in very unique situations. So urea and ammonium don't offer a whole lot of possibilities as an alternate source of nitrogen fertilization. So one of the questions of great research in the late 70s and 80s were, are there genetic differences in soybean response to nitrate? There were a lot of screening studies that were done, and they did find differences both in Bradyrhizobium japonicum and their sensitivity to nitrate, and in soybean genotypes and their response to nitrate. But the conclusion was that these were relatively minor and didn't have a large effect agronomically. They really weren't worth pursuing, but they did find very, very large differences when they started looking at genetic mutations. And this is some pictures from Peter Dreshoff's lab. We're looking on the left there at what he called a nitrate-tolerant symbiosis. And on the right would be the wild-type mutant, Bragg soybean in this case. And so in the presence of nitrate, these genotypes still are able to nodulate, and they still maintain some level of nitrogen fixation. Jim Harper did a similar kind of mutation at Illinois with the USDA, and where you have a different mutant. He called his the hypernodulating mutant. And this is an example from work from Jim's lab. Hypernodulating mutants, or these NTS mutants, as I mentioned, are less affected by nitrate than the wild type. And again, we're looking at some data from Harper's lab here, where we're looking at acetylene reduction activity on the y-axis versus days after 6 millimolar nitrate addition on the x-axis. We've got see if I can move this. We have three different hypernodulate mutants here, shown with the open symbols versus the wild type with the closed symbol. And what I want you to note is that no nodule activity in the wild type in Williams after about 3 days, whereas the mutants maintain somewhere between 30 and 50% of their nodule activity. The hypernodulate mutants yield less than the wild type, and that's the real story there. You think about how much nodule mass there is there, it's more of a parasitic relationship than a symbiotic association at that point. This is, again, work from Harper's lab where we're looking at yield in kilograms per hectare. We've got Williams over here on the far left, three hypernodulating mutants in the center, and then a non-nod on the far right. The blue is with zero nitrogen, and the red is with 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare fertilization. And in every case, you can see that the wild type, the Williams, yielded more than did these hypernodulating mutants. So it's really not something that's agronomically acceptable. So concluding this second part of my talk, just in summary, because nitrogen fixation and nodulation are decreased by nitrate, it's really difficult to just add supplemental nitrogen without a proportional decrease in nitrogen fixation. That's the real kicker. I put paradox in my title, and this is really the paradox of the whole situation. An exception maybe is when there's some sort of environmental stress or when nitrogen fixation is compromised, maybe because of an ineffective V. japonicum strain or something. There may be some opportunities there. Increasing the nitrogen supply above that which the crop can supply by nitrogen fixation may mean that we need to totally replace all the nitrogen that's in the system with nitrogen fertilizer. And for me, the question comes back, is that something we really want to do? Is that something that's economical? I don't think there's any way. I told you earlier that for high yields of around 100 bushels per acre, we're looking at applying somewhere around 600 kilograms or more of nitrogen per hectare. And is it environmentally sound? I don't think that that's something that we want running into the Gulf right now. The third part of my talk and final part is the yield response to nitrogen fertilizer. And this will start off with, I want to just make a couple of comments about foliar nitrogen. We talked about nitrogen accumulation rates somewhere between 0.4 and 0.6 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per day are very typical of a well-managed crop. And I'll show you data in a minute for some results that we found under high nitrogen fertilization rates in contest fields, nitrogen accumulation rates of over 2 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per day. And you think about what you do with a foliar nitrogen treatment. If it's 20% nitrogen and you put out 4 liters per hectare, this provides about 0.8 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare or 0.08 grams of nitrogen per meter squared. So it's about a tenth of what you would get from a nitrogen fixation crop on a day. And you can multiply that by 10 if you want to and say, well, it might provide a day's worth of nitrogen. And so you're really looking at very minor contributions to the total nitrogen balance of the crop. So my conclusion for foliar nitrogen is that it really doesn't provide meaningful amounts of nitrogen to the crop. We've done quite a bit of work on Kip Culler's farm in southwest Missouri. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Kip, he's been very active in the Missouri soybean yield contest for several years with yields ranging from 7.3 up to 10.8 tons per hectare. Mr. Cullors has allowed us to come on his farm and make measurements there. We've tried to document both his production practices a little bit, his yields, but also looking at some physiological parameters. And a couple of the traits that we focused on are nitrogen accumulation rates and radiation use efficiency. These are looking at five of the varieties that he had in 2013. We're looking at nitrogen accumulation rates ranging from around 2.1 grams per meter squared per day. I mentioned earlier that typically for nitrogen accumulation rates under well-managed conditions, we're looking at about 0.4 to 0.6 grams of nitrogen per meter squared per day. So we're about four times of what most nitrogen accumulation rates have been reported in the literature under well-managed conditions. Radiation use efficiency values, somewhere between 1.5 and 1.9. This is total solar radiation. And again, very high radiation use efficiency values. Typically, you would find in a well-managed crop somewhere between 0.8 and 1, so close to doubling the radiation use efficiency values that are typically reported for a well-managed crop. We've tried to take some of the ideas that we learned from Mr. Cullors and apply them in our experiment station about 90 miles to the south. Oh, excuse me. I meant to mention that about 10% of the nitrogen that we found in Mr. Cullors' crop by N15 methods was derived from nitrogen fixation, so less than 10%. So a very small amount of the nitrogen came from nitrogen fixation. So as I was saying, we tried to take some of these same practices and apply them to our experiment station in Fayetteville on the farm there. And let me tell you a little bit about what we did to do that. We took our soil test recommendations for NP and K, or P and K, and essentially doubled them. We applied 12 to 17 tons per hectare of dry poultry litter. We deep tilled to greater than 36 centimeters to break up any kind of soil restrictions, the root restrictions the crop may have. We tried to plant early. I'm not going to talk about that, but I think this is something that may come up in our later talks today. We were looking at narrow row spacings, about 46 centimeters, with about 35 plants per square meter. We set up a sprinkler irrigation system and irrigated at a 25 millimeter deficit. And we fertigated through that sprinkler irrigation system. A summary of what we ended up doing that year, we ended up applying 625 millimeters of irrigation. The litter plus the preseason fertilizer amounts represented 781 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen, 305 P, 631 K, 90 of S, and 31 of magnesium. And then through our fertigation, we put on another 178 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen, 40 of K, and 11 of sulfur. So we put a lot of stuff out there. We also were really focused on making sure that we were managing pests well, that we were really paying close attention to disease pressure. We put out prophylactic fungicide applications, putting out that much fertilizer, that much irrigation. We were setting ourselves up for a fungal infection, but I think we did a pretty good job of holding that back. This is what the crop looked like at maturity. I don't know how well it shows up in here, but we've got brown pods that are at about 13% moisture, ready to harvest, and a pretty full crop of green leaves there for our soybean too. We had to burn this down a couple of times before we could harvest. Our yields range from around 5 tons, almost to 8 tons per hectare. We had large differences in our cultivars, and I'm not really sure why. Compared to variety trials, we had differences among our cultivars in this experiment of almost 3 tons per hectare, compared to variety trials where we see somewhere around 700 kilograms per hectare between our lows and our highs. And it may be that for these high yield, high management systems, we have differences in genotypes that we don't see at lower yield levels, that there's a different G by E going on. Our radiation use efficiency values were very typical to what we saw at Mr. Cullors, 1.4 to 1.8, and the nitrogen accumulation rates were also very similar to what we saw at Mr. Cullors. And again, about less than 10% of the nitrogen came from nitrogen fixation. Again, one of the key questions for me is this something that we really want to do? Is it economical, and is it environmentally acceptable to put out this much nitrogen fertilizer and this much phosphorus fertilizer as well? So I'm going to come back to a quote that Streeter ended up his review. In 1916, Fred and Grawl noted that this, meaning nitrogen fixation response to fertilizer, was already an old subject area, and in spite of a steadily growing body of scientific literature which reflects some innovative and thorough research, we do not seem to be closer to understanding or alleviating the inhibitions than we were in 1916. Streeter wrote this in 1988, and to update you, I think this pretty much tells the same story. There have been a lot of progress since 1988 in understanding nitrogen fixation and in understanding the molecular aspects of what goes into a symbiosis. But I'm not sure we've come any closer to really answering the question on how we can alleviate this inhibition of nitrogen fixation by nitrogen fertilizer. So just some final thoughts here in a summary. Soybean needs large amounts of nitrogen for grain production. Somewhere, dependent upon your assumptions, 75 to 85 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare for each ton of grain. Under low soil nitrogen conditions, nitrogen fixation can provide enough nitrogen for, in our conditions, somewhere between 4.5 and 5 tons per hectare, and I think that agrees pretty well with what some others may tell us this afternoon. Inorganic nitrogen decreases nodule formation, nodule mass, and nitrogen fixation. And to reach these maximum yield levels, if we're looking at nitrogen, instead of thinking about supplementing nitrogen, we may be talking about supplementing nitrogen fixation, we may be talking about replacing nitrogen fixation, and that means an awful lot of nitrogen has to be applied. So that's it for me. Paul, I'll turn it back to you.
All right, we have time for a couple questions here for Dr. Purcell. And go ahead and ask, and speak up if you can. We won't ask the
microphone. I'm curious on those mutants, if anybody did any total nitrogen accumulation, whether to continue to, on a per acre basis, accumulate nitrogen higher. On the yield was lower, but was nitrogen higher, or the percent protein higher in the grain?
I'd have to go back and look. My recollection is that everything was depressed. Crop growth was depressed. Nitrogen fixation on a per unit area basis in field studies was depressed. Protein concentration was not any greater. If I'm misquoting that, somebody correct me, but that's my recollection.
No, I think the bacteria were a disease at that point.
Yeah.
Did you see you saw a big difference among cultivars? Was there any sort of patterns you can point to in terms of seed number, seed size, duration, anything like that that gives a hint why some would have been as much as 3 tons higher than another?
No, Emerson, I can't. We did this for 3 years and our field experiment, we evaluated somewhere between 13 and close to 20 genotypes each year, and they were from Pioneer, Asgro, and Norfolk King. There wasn't anything that was associated with a particular brand, a particular company. We also did a lot of stuff with different additives, seed treatments, over-the-top kind of stuff, found very little effect. As far as differences among genotypes, I can't point to anything that was consistent among years or made me think that there was something systematic in what we were seeing. But
so they weren't consistent from time to time either?
There was some consistency. There was nothing that you would point to and say, this is, if you're going to grow 100 bushel per acre crop, this is the one you want to do. I think that when growers have talked to me about what they need to do to grow 100 bushels per acre on their farms, one of the things I've suggested is have a small variety trial on your farm before you do anything else to really pick out what's going to do best in your environment. A large part does seem to be genotypic. I'm going to let you call.
Okay, let's see. I think you had your hand up first there, sir.
Do we have information about differences in bacteria strain, genetic variation in at the bacterial level in inhibition tolerance to nitrate? We focus mostly on soybean genotype.
Yes.
And not so much we focus on the bacteria.
Right. So the question was differences in the Bradyrhizobium strains and their response of nitrogen fixation to nitrate. A large number, and maybe not all of them, a large number of the screening trials were done in culture. But then again, the ones that were done in controlled conditions to look at nitrogen fixation rate in soybean had relatively small differences. You know, the big problem, again, whenever you're talking about trying to select a Brady Rhizobium strain and use it in the field, is how you're going to get that strain to nodulate exclusively with soybean. And the results I saw were never very convincing anyway, as far as differences among the rhizobium strains.